Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Through expert interviews, we help you navigate the challenges of leading, hiring, growing, and nurturing your tech team to deliver the value your customers demand. Brought to you by AgilityFeet.com, experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally.
And you know, our recruiting philosophy for, well, 25 years has been attitude, aptitude, and skills in that order. And you know, we feel like individuals that have, you know, the right work ethic, that are open and honest communicators, that hold themselves and others accountable, you know, those types of things are harder to teach, but we can teach you the skills, right? We can surround you with really talented engineers who can teach you how to be a talented engineer. The work ethic and the attitude, that's a little bit harder.
Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, the podcast for leaders of growing software engineering teams. I'm Aaron Syme, here with my co-host, David Alfaro. How are you doing today, David?
I'm doing fine. Very happy. We were able to record the entire session without rain in Costa Rica, and that is good because it's a one less thing to worry about. I mean, it's a good. So very happy.
Yeah, and in fact, we talk a lot about remote work in this episode. One thing I've always enjoyed about working remotely with you is hearing the tropical birds in the background. And there were a few times in this recording, if our listeners turn up the volume a little bit, they'll probably hear some tropical birds outside your window as well. And please never close that window. I love that sound. It brings me peace every time we talk.
Okay.
In today's episode, we have discussed before that human talent is more precious than gold right now. It's very true in technology. And as the technology market has globalized, a lot's changed about technical recruiting. So that's a topic of our conversation today with Tricia Rhodes, where we learned how they transitioned at Singlestone from being an in-person consulting firm that mainly worked on-site with clients to now having a nationwide workforce and work from home. What did you find interesting about this conversation with Tricia?
Well, the navigating the transition that all the tech companies went through this pandemic. I mean, there is a before and after, and the after is quite interesting. It's different. It's absolutely different. And the process of learning, of accepting, and dealing with the anxiety of what the new normal will be, it's there. And we explored that very carefully. Good advice, good tips, good laughs. So it's a good episode.
Yeah,
I recommend it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a very fun conversation. All right, well, let's get to our conversation with Tricia Rhodes from Singlestone. Hiring and retention for tech roles is hard. And that's what we'll be discussing today with Tricia Rhodes, who is the Chief People Officer at Singlestone. Singlestone is an IT services and consulting firm in Glen Allen, Virginia. Tricia's worked there for over 15 years in a variety of recruiting and talent management roles. Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, Tricia.
Thanks, Aaron. Glad to be here today.
Well, it's great to have you here. So there's a lot that we could talk about. There's a lot of challenges going on in talent management these days. Sounds like we're talking about rock stars instead of software developers and IT people, but sometimes we are talking about rock stars, right? So maybe talent management is the word we should be using. But before we dive into that, for our listeners, let's start with a little more context about Singlestone and the work that you all do. So tell us a little bit about Singlestone, please.
Sure. So like you mentioned in the intro, you know, Singlestone is an IT services and consulting firm. We were actually founded in Charlottesville about 25 years ago and moved into the Richmond market in about 2007 and really have grown pretty significantly from there. And so we focus in sort of three major areas, cloud, data, and software. Obviously, those are very compatible services and have been a great sort of lead into the market for us. Growing like crazy and have been for the past few years, which is exciting and challenging all at the same time.
Yeah, for sure. So with that growth, and especially in the context of the pandemic, you know, what has that journey been like the last few years, and how has the pandemic affected your work model, you know, the way that you work, as well as your hiring model at Singlestone?
Sure. I think just like most other firms across the country, it was a radical shift almost overnight. And so while we were fortunate that we're a technology company, and so the idea that our team went remote almost immediately, thankfully we had the tools and the infrastructure to support them from a work standpoint, productivity standpoint. But this culture, this sort of the water cooler conversations, the whiteboard conversations, the reading the expressions on someone's faces when they're trying to solve a problem and they can't figure it out, like that disappeared, right? That disappeared almost immediately. And, you know, that has been something that is slow to come back. We're working towards that and trying to really allow our project teams to sort of determine how they want to work in this new virtual first environment. But I'm not going to lie, it has been a huge culture shift for us and something that we're still working through and learning kind of as we go. You know, as for some of the opportunities I think that it created for us, you know, Singlestone for years really only recruited talent out of Central Virginia, occasionally DC, maybe Raleigh here and there, but the bulk of our team was in Central Virginia. And one of the silver linings of the pandemic for us has been the national footprint that we're able to recruit from. And so we have now talent in California and Colorado and Tennessee and New York, in DC and Maryland. And that has been tremendously exciting for our culture and our team, just in terms of diverse experiences, perspectives, figuring out how to deal with West Coast time zones and how that affects your daily stand-ups. I thought it was going to be more challenging than it is, but I think a lot of those folks are sort of used to it working with East Coast companies. But while, you know, we're still sort of settling in and dealing with some of the challenges of not being together and how that collaboration is just different, I do think that the idea that we have a connection now with employees and clients all over the country has been a really positive thing for Singlestone, and certainly is helping us evolve into the kind of company that we want to be.
So is your client base going more national then, as well as employees?
It is. Our client base was a bit ahead of us in terms of employees, just because, you know, we had sort of made a deliberate effort to focus outside of Virginia or the Mid-Atlantic region about 5.5-6 years ago. But, you know, we were, for the most part, a team that didn't travel on the regular. And that has been something that was shifting, right, with clients expecting people to be co-located with their teams, wanting to pay for teams to travel. That wasn't really the way that we had structured our business or our teams in the past. And so that was a shift for us that we were just starting to embark on. That, as you can imagine, the pandemic put a screeching halt to. And so the benefit, I think, for us being that we have, you know, technical development teams for the most part working on client work is they don't need to be there. And clients saw that. They were able to see how productive and how valuable we could be without physically sitting next to us every day. And, you know, the whole collaboration and sort of the personal connection, that has probably been a bigger challenge for us and our clients. But I think we're all learning how to, you know, kind of overcome that together. And I don't think anyone will ever have it solved, but it's a journey that we can learn through together.
Absolutely. So would you call yourself a remote first, hybrid model at this point? You know, which way are you going?
Yes, definitely remote first. The hybrid model we're kind of dipping our toe into. And, you know, like I was saying earlier, some of this is just really new for us given the employee base that we now have across the country. And so what we're doing is we're asking the team to decide what works best for them. And we're trying to provide the tools and technology in terms of, you know, kind of enabling our office space with technology so that even those that are in California can feel like they're connected to the team, even though they're not physically sitting there every day. And kind of even experimenting with the whole office hours concept where someone says, I'm going to be available for this period of time. And so you can engage with me like you were sitting next to me. Again, not the same as sitting right next to each other, but certainly better than feeling like you have to ping someone and interrupt them via Slack or email or something like that. There was another part of that question that you asked me, and I totally forgot what the answer, whatever the question was.
Well, now you're making me forget what the other part of it was, too. So it was just if you were hybrid or just remote work. I think that was it.
Yes. But, But, you know, there, and as you know, the market for software developers right now is insane. And it has been for the last 2.5 years. And, you know, us saying that we are going to require people to come back into the office will, I think it will be a huge, it would be a huge step backwards for us, not only from a retention standpoint, but also, I mean, progressive companies should be thinking about a new way of working. And that includes being able to support people that are not physically together Monday through Friday from 9 to 5. I would be lying if I say we had it licked by any stretch of the imagination, but we are trying to do some things that sort of bring in the old benefit of being together and also, you know, experimenting and committing to investing in some of the new tools and technology that'll help our remote team feel more connected to the team that's in Richmond.
Yeah, I would agree that, I mean, we, David and I have been doing this for over 10 years, and I don't think we have it licked either at this point, right? We don't have it all entirely solved in remote work, but certainly it's changed. Certainly it's changed a lot, even for us in the last few years. Wouldn't you say, David?
Yeah, something that was a very important turning point in our experience years ago was when we decided to wet our toes with one person being remote.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was massive for us. Like, wow! It's so, I am so afraid, but I need to do this because I don't have any other option. So it was very scary, but it opened our minds to a new continent. Do you have that experience? I mean, what was the moment where you guys tried to do it for the first time? How was it?
Oh, scary as shit is what it was. You know, we had a very small base of employees that didn't live in Richmond. And so it was for us, like we went remote overnight. And I think I'm sure everybody, well, maybe not everybody, but a lot of people thought, oh, this is going to be something that's going to last a few months, maybe, and then we'll go back to normal. And that just never happened. And so for us, it was, you know, like we had to shift and change the way we communicated and engaged with our employees almost immediately. You know, one of the things that we talked about in our scramble to kind of figure out how to keep our team engaged over the pandemic was, we only gathered quarterly to tell our team kind of, hey, this is what's going on, and kind of report on our progress financially and our strategic objectives, because we're consultants and our team is client facing. And we felt like, you know, having a meeting every month, like that's a huge time commitment for these folks. And it's a lot of prep. So, you know, we chose to do it quarterly. Well, the idea that we didn't talk to our team or see people for 3 months, like that was completely off the table once the pandemic hit. And so we instituted something called Firm Fridays, where we basically hosted an hour every week, and we talked about a variety of things. It was initially led by our CEO, just because it was important for him to be in front of the company regularly at that time, and kind of providing some big and important updates related to work and financials and stability and all of that stuff. But it has since morphed into such an awesome experience for our team. We talk about promotions. We demo client work. We talk about internal projects and initiatives that we're leading. We celebrate each other and kind of shout out the work that teams are doing. And sometimes we even just have an open dialogue like, hey, David, what do you want to talk about today? And let's talk about that. And so it's been a great connection point for our team. And we kept thinking, oh, weekly's too much. They're going to tell us to back off and go back down to a month. But every time we ask them, they're like, no. We want more. We want more. We want more. And so that's just one small way where we like shifted almost immediately from, you know, communicating and engaging with the whole team on a quarterly basis to making sure that we were connecting with them at least once a week to talk about a host of different things.
Right. Do you have a set of favorite tools that made your life easier regarding with this new way of life?
Yes.
The communication tools like Slack, but do you have something else that you like now better than before?
So it's not Microsoft Teams, I'll tell you that.
Well done. Well done. So
is there a particular tool? I don't know. I think the way I would answer that, though, is I don't believe we were cognizant enough of mm-hmm. connecting with people that weren't physically with us every day. And so the idea mm-hmm. that we have video and audio conferencing abilities, and that every single meeting has a conference line attached to it, that people are thoughtful about sending materials in advance, mm-hmm. and then just calling a timeout and asking for engagement for people over the phone, that was just not common practice for us. And, you know, in hindsight, I think when those individuals were joining remotely, they felt left out of the conversation. And so I do think that this whole, you know, Zoom world has been really transformative for us, and just thinking about the participant that's not physically here. And I do think as we, you know, sort of continue learning how this hybrid work model is going to evolve, for our clients, that could be a connection point to them saying, hey, listen, we can engage with you like you're here, even though we're not sitting next to you. And so I think that we'll continue to explore ways that we can be virtual, but feel like we're physically present with each other. So kind right. of a half-assed answer, but I think you know where
I'm going. I get you. It's a new mindset, and yes. it is safe. That's the point, maybe. Now, for some people that are still new to this, even though it could be hard to imagine, because really everything is like that now. But I think my question has merit. There could be the fear that what happens, I cannot control my people anymore because they are not physically in the office. So how do I know if the developer is actually working, the 8 hours a day?
Yeah.
Is that a valid concern in this line of work? Can you give me your experience?
Sure. I mean, we're super fortunate in that, you know, we're still a relatively small company, 150 people. And we have an extremely high bar for engineering and just consulting talent in general. And so the rigor that we put folks through in the interview process gives us more confidence that these are the type of people that are going to be great at their craft, that are going to engage and collaborate with their teams, that are going to be consultative in nature and just communicative and sort of, you know, open and honest with challenges and when they need help. But we strike out just like everyone else. I think what I found over the course of the last 2.5 years is the less experienced developers have had more challenges than sort of your veteran developers. And so when you're hiring someone who's earlier on in their career and maybe doesn't have the same foundation that a 10 or 15 year software developer veteran would have, they need more support. You know, that whole idea where someone's got their head in their hands and just doesn't get it, you don't see that when you're not together all the time. And I think it's intimidating to come into an environment where these software engineers and these consultants are so smart and they're so good at what they do, to raise your hand and be like, hey, I need help, I'm not getting this. And so I think where we've seen people sort of kind of fade into the darkness or get really overwhelmed and then just not pull their weight, a lot of that I think has been on the less experienced side. And I do think some of it, not all of it, some of it is just work ethic and attitude. But also some of it is just, I think, not being able to keep up, and that's really difficult to manage when you're by yourself alone, and would be easier to manage if you're sitting in a team next to people.
I think you're right. In our case, what I've seen, to complement what you've said, what I've seen is that in this particular line of work, I mean, software engineers, we, because I am a software engineer, although I do other things now, but in general, you can trust that they are actually working. I mean, that. Yeah. It is, and the measure of that is, are they delivering results yeah. on time? And well, software development is something like that. And sometimes is the brilliance comes in the first 2 days of the sprint, not the whole sprint is needed to solve something. And that happens. And sometimes it's the other way around. Yeah. But I think that finding, and you're absolutely right, finding the right person means also finding the right the person that has the personality to take care of him or herself in terms of mental health. I mean, get up by yourself and go and do yeah. some jogging and come back and that kind of thing. But also it is so good to feel that you don't need to have someone breathing on their necks for them to do the work.
Yes.
So, and that comes after a nice recruitment process. Is you determining those important things that make a person responsible and self-disciplined so they can be work remotely.
Yeah. And you know, our recruiting philosophy for, 25 years has been attitude, aptitude, and skills in that order. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we feel like individuals that have, you know, the right work ethic, that are open and honest communicators, that hold themselves and others accountable, you know, those types of things are harder to teach, but we can teach you the skills, right? We can surround you with really talented engineers who can teach you how to be a talented engineer. The work ethic and the attitude, that's a little bit harder. One thing, because I don't want to suggest that we're not interested or learning how to support less experienced developers better. We're kind of right now experimenting with this plus one concept, which is something that's maybe a lot of larger firms can easily do, but we're doing now kind of for the first time, where if a developer comes to the team and they're newer and less experienced, we will pair them up with a senior engineer for, let's say, 8 to 12 weeks, and they will not be responsible for actually writing code, but they're responsible for sitting next to that other engineer, sitting next to them and kind of working alongside them every day. And I think I'm not an engineer, that whole pair programming concept. I think the difference for us is we take the delivery pressure off of that person. So it's like you get a ramp up time. You can learn and you can ask questions because you're actually doing work with that person every single day. And so while the more senior engineer might be responsible for actually, you know, submitting the code, they're working with someone or they're teaching someone and working with someone who's kind of learning that along the way. And that may not sound like a big deal for some companies, but again, for a small consulting firm, you know, that's a revenue generating engineer who we're investing in because we want to help them be successful. And we weren't doing that in the past. And I think that, you know, we've realized it's so important for us to build out our base of consulting talent. And that means we're going to have to invest in their learning and development. And so this is just one way that we're working on it. And I think we're a few engineers in and it's worked a whole lot better than last year when I was like, what do you mean you went to California for a week and didn't bill your hours? What are you talking about?
Right. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Aaron.
Oh, sorry. That really resonates with me, Trisha. I think because I think it is true that the early developers, younger, you know, less experienced developers will struggle more with that learning, because sort of like, you know, David said, you don't have to worry so much about a developer working. I definitely agree with that. But sometimes you do have to worry about, are they working on the right thing or are they working with the right, maybe the right focus, right? Especially when you're a less experienced developer, it's very easy to go down the rabbit hole of trying to solve a technical problem a particular way. And just, you know, you just keep digging that hole deeper and deeper. And you need that pair, you need that plus one, as you said, to kind of help you lift your head and say, well, why don't we approach it a different way? You know, let's look at this problem from a different angle. And I really like that. Something that we've done in our video group, WebRTC Ventures, is we started somewhat similar to what you described, Trisha. We started a training and mentoring program this year where when we're bringing in people, especially because in that group, they work with a very specific skill set and it's hard to hire people with that. So we put them through some online courses, some initial training in those courses and in the technologies that they're going to use. And then we put them on it's like an internal project, basically, you know, like a little demo project to demonstrate that they have successfully learned some of those tasks. And what we're looking for in that, it's really important to us, and you probably have something similar because you're also a consulting and services group like we are. We're looking for not only did they advance their skills in the video technologies that we use, but also we're looking for them to communicate that back to us in some form, whether it's like writing a blog post, recording a demo video, and explaining it, so that we're getting some additional assessment of those soft skills that are so important in consulting and in working with clients. You know, can you do the work, but then also can you communicate it to your client?
Yeah.
And part of that too, we are giving them some fixed deadlines in that process too, to make sure that even as a remote worker, who, you know, we're not looking over their shoulder directly, that they understand the importance of those deadlines and of communicating at least their incremental progress, even if they're, you know, missing something technically. That thing that, you know, if somebody goes through that program, or we see this in the interview process, where they'll miss the deadline and not tell you until after they've missed the deadline, then that's an immediate, okay, that person's not going to work here. Yep. You know, they're not going to work in our team. Our clients will relieve them of their duties very quickly if that's their attitude, right? You know, you have to have that professional maturity in remote work, especially to be able to say, hey, I'm halfway to the deadline and I am not halfway through progress. And here's some obstacles I'm running into, and, you know, having some heads up that things may not be going well long before the deadline is really, really important.
It is.
In software development in general, but especially in remote work.
Absolutely.
Trisha, have you gone through that? I mean, I loved when you said, and you listed the hierarchy of values when you're assessing someone, right? I mean, these are our values, and they are well thought. I mean, we put a lot of effort in defining these values, and we want to see if a new person is going to be a good match with those values. And that exercise is so valuable. I mean, the other day we were talking this, Karen and I, in different conversations, but I mean, how those values manifest in action, in reality.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, especially for the younger people, they don't know. I mean, these are our values as company. but how? Can you give me three examples for each? How those manifest, right? And that, I mean, the part of I don't know if educating is the right word, but making clear this is the way we behave is so important. And I guess that the spaces, like you mentioned, like Fridays every week, when you can take a moment and maybe celebrate someone that manifested those values in some way, something like that.
Yeah.
Is that right? I mean, I think it's a very valid conversation, that one. These are our values.
Yes.
How in your company you promote and cultivate those values?
Sure. I mean, and it does. It starts in the recruiting process. The fact that we declare attitude and aptitude as two of the sort of more important than the skills coming in. Our values are learning, excellence, and service. And so the idea that, you know, we're looking for people who are continually looking to learn and experiment and challenge their way of thinking, looking for people that aren't afraid to ask why and who are naturally curious, and also looking for people that have a real service-oriented attitude, right? The idea of putting others before themselves, and then doing that with passion and really wanting to be good at what you do. When I think about the people at Single Stone and what makes them special, I say to folks all the time, they're really good at their craft, whether that craft is software development or recruiting or office management or sales and business development. They care a lot about being good at what they do. And then on top of that, they want to be really strong teammates, and they want to deliver for the client, and they want to just do more than, you know, kind of what's expected of them every day. And because we set that expectation in the recruiting process, it's really easy then, well, not really easy, easier for us to hold people accountable as we kind of go through that whole employee experience. And we do every Friday celebrate individuals that are living our values, and we call them out and we recognize them with a financial incentive just to say, hey, listen, you know, we see you, we value you, and we appreciate you. And we actually don't let Living the Values Awards go to teams. It has to go to an individual, not because teams aren't delivering awesome value. We can shout out teams all the time, but we really want to elevate the individual contributions and how that contributes to the whole. And we feel like that's more meaningful to do if it's just an individual nomination. Another thing we do is when folks get promoted, it's not just like, congratulations, David, here's your new role. Managers actually write up kind of a bio, kind of, for lack of a better word. And we talk about how you've advanced technically. And then we also talk about all of the other contributions that you've made to the firm and to building a team and to being a technical leader. And so you get a story around what is it that makes this person eligible for that next level, so that people really see, oh, wow, yes, their technical skills are extremely valuable. And these are all of the other things they're doing that are connected to Singlestone's vision and values that make this person kind of a candidate for promotion. And then last, and certainly not least, you know, we actually have a project feedback mechanism. And so obviously, as a consulting firm, our developers are working on project teams all the time. So your manager doesn't really know how you're doing outside of the feedback they're getting from the technical lead and the project lead. And so our surveys go out every quarter. There's an internal retrospective that is discussed. It's just for the team, that talks about what you're doing well and where you have opportunities to improve. And then every team member actually rates their colleagues on their delivery. So are you doing what we need you to do to the quality that we need you to do it? And then all of the other questions, I think it's 7 questions. So 2 are craft related. And then the other 5 are, do you do what you say you're going to do? Are you a teammate that I enjoy working with? Do you deliver on time? Do you ask questions? Are you curious? So it ties back to our values, and then individuals get feedback along those lines. And so it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it's helping us reinforce what's most important at Singlestone on a regular basis in the setting that our team is sort of in day in and day out.
And I think that's very important for the recruiting process when, and maybe I can choose could be my segue to the thing I like very much in my work is when I do the sales pitch, but for a candidate, right? I mean, that part, I like to think that we have 2 sales pitches at least, I mean, for new clients, but also for the candidates, because now the candidates, the relationship between demand and offer is tilted toward the benefit now. And part of the process is, although there is an evaluation process, a very strict evaluation process in this side of the conversation, the reality also is that they deserve also the space for their evaluation on what we are and what we do. And that explanation of the values, I think, comes first, I think, always. So let me go there. So, what do you think has changed after the pandemic regarding that sales pitch that you give to the candidate in this back and forth process of evaluating them and then evaluating the company? Yep. What have changed?
I think the biggest change for us, you know, has been, I would say to folks, come into the office and meet the team and experience them live. And it will make you feel like it's a place that you want to be, or you'll run like hell out the door and you'll never look back. But that energy, you know, the idea that you're walking past rooms and teams are whiteboarding, and you see, you know, that there's a cross-functional team. It's not just a bunch of developers with headphones on banging on their keyboard, that people are alive and that they're talking and that they're laughing. There's an energy there. And it feels like an environment where people are just challenging each other, learning from each other, you know, innovating with each other. And that is something that we have not been able to replicate, regardless of how hard we've tried. We've even, you know, we moved into a new office and we had our team video the office, so it feels like you can see some of that stuff happening live, but it's just not the same. And so to me, that's been the biggest thing that I've missed, and I think the team has missed, is that we just haven't been able to replicate that kind of experience. And you all know, as veterans in the industry, good engineers want to work with other good engineers. And you can have a technical conversation and you can do a technical assessment. And there's some banter that goes back and forth. But when you get to see people working together, it's just, it's powerful and it's exciting. And so that is the piece that is still missing for us. And that if you have any suggestions on how we can replicate that, my friend, I'll take all the help I can.
Well, I mean, the way that we're, I'm sorry for hijacking the conversation, Harry. I will.
No, please. This is great.
Something that I found very important is that before wasn't that important. I mean, in our field of action, right? But which is not the same as yours, although the concepts are the same. Is that in our field of action, something that before was less important, but now is vital, is the person that is doing the recruiting becoming the best ambassador for this company?
Yeah.
So that's why I now say I have a sales pitch.
Sure.
and the sales, but a good sales pitch in the sense that we start with the values. We start with why we are so spectacular, why we live so much in this concept, in this company, a message, a press, some kind of manifestation from the CEO, that kind of thing, like, hey, this is important. Thank you for participating in this process.
Yes.
I mean, this is important for us, and explaining why it's important, why this job is important, what this specific job position is so important, and we feel the honor. I say this very often. It is an honor for me to be in front of an intelligent mind that is considering us for this position, for spending some years of their lives with us.
I love that.
So, but see, the message is different, because in our case before it was just as easy as saying, "Oh, you're going to pay a lot." Done. That was easy. But now it's not.
Are you hiring? No.
See, so the conversation is way more towards, it's about brilliance now. It's about this has some meaning. It means something. And something that I'm taking from what you say, and I appreciate, I'm going to take notes here, is about you're going to be among the brightest people. And yes. Trying to take the notes. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
It's good. It enriches my sales pitch.
Ryan Shriver, who I've worked with for all 15 years that I've been at Singlestone, you know, he said something a couple years ago, and I was like, oh, that's brilliant. And I'm going to talk about it in the recruiting process. He's like, our commitment to you is that you're going to leave here a better engineer than when you got here.
I love it.
If that is something great. You can commit to and stand behind, like, we're doing something right.
Yeah.
No,
I love that.
And I want to emphasize this. When I say I love it and I say sales pitch, I want to clarify something that sometimes is not clear. Is that we mean what we say. We are not manipulating people here. I mean, we are persuading towards a good thing. and what you say is that you're going to leave a better developer than now. So that is the truth. We actually believe that, and we've seen the facts that supports that claim. And I think that is the important thing. People are looking for transparency.
Yeah.
They matter. I mean, are you going to care about me, yes or no? Because I have other options to consider.
Right. Yeah, it's not about the money anymore. And they're definitely, you know, developers are shopping around a lot more than they used to. Yep. Certainly, we see that as well. So, yeah, I love this. I love making that extra connection with them about the things that they really value in that process. I also really like of how the write-ups that you talked about earlier, Tricia, when someone is promoted. Is that something you were doing before the pandemic, or that's something that came about through remote work? Because I see a lot of value for that in remote work in particular, right?
That's something that we've always done. I say always, you know, at least for the last 10 to 12 years, because there was a big mystery around the promotion process and just people not understanding sort of what it took to move from point A to point B. And while we can put a career path in place that sort of talks about role expectations and what, you know, what, how the role grows and accountability changes, there's also a story or a narrative around it, I think, that is important for people to hear. And, you know, I'm an engineer, and I look up to Ryan or Allison or George or Trey. And I think, like, I want to be like them. And so understanding what they've done to be in the positions that they're in, I think, is something that's just really helpful and valuable for people. It just, it makes it personal. I think it's more important now in the remote environment, just because people don't know George and Allison and Trey, you know, so it's
right.
harder for people to connect with each other. And so being able to describe in a storytelling kind of way how someone has moved from point A to point B, I think has been a really healthy thing for us. And it's also a really nice gesture for the employee too. Like, the manager does a write-up and collects feedback from people on the team. And I think when the individual gets that, it's like, oh, wow, they like me. They really like me.
Right, so right.
It makes people feel good because they get a nice written sort of outline of all the great things that they've done that have put them in this position.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, you know, you want them to stay with you forever. But if they are ever, you know, looking at other moving on to another position, what a great item to sort of carry with them, too, yeah. You know. Yeah, but yeah, for remote work, especially because there is so much context that's lost where, you know, if one of my peers gets promoted and maybe I'm hoping someday to get the same promotion, you know, knowing, well, how did that person get the promotion, you know, maybe when I didn't. If I was in the office with them, I probably would have noticed those extra, you know, things that they were doing that made them stand out, right? But I'm not going to catch that context remotely, perhaps. So, yeah, I love that. I love that. That's definitely something I want to take from this conversation and implement myself. That's a great idea. Yeah, I think I also really like the living the values that you mentioned. You know, it's something, and I think there's something we do that's probably pretty similar to that. That in our video group, Mariana Lopez, who's our COO in that group, she has started. In the regular company meetings there, listing out the values. And then, we used to do just like shout outs, basically. But now tying every shout out to a specific corporate value. So something like, you know, as a consulting organization, one of the values that we say is we want to be drivers, not passengers with our clients, right? We want to help drive the solutions and come up with ideas for it, right? And so that's something that we talk about in the interview process now, and we talk about internally, but it wasn't always communicated across the team. So instead of just giving a shout out that, hey, Trisha did a great job with this, saying, here's Trisha showing how she was a driver, not a passenger specifically, because she went above and beyond what the client was looking for there. And I think that's, you know, also the sort of thing that, especially in a remote environment, needs to be explicitly called out.
Absolutely. We, I think, have become a lot more dependent on Slack than we were when we were sitting in the office together. And because not everyone is comfortable raising their hand and saying, oh, I want to say something amazing about my colleagues, we have a shout out channel on Slack. And it actually ties into our HRIS, which is our performance management feedback. It sounds fancier than it is. It's not that fancy. but it basically, you can tie it into Lattice, and then you will have it in your record, so to speak. Your manager can see it, but the team also gets a notification that's like, Aaron's doing an amazing job. He's living our values of, you know, pursuing excellence and serving passionately, and it tags to the values. It goes out to the entire team, and then it gets sort of automatically loaded into your personnel file, for lack of a better word. And that, I think, has been great too, to just give people a voice who may not feel as comfortable sort of nominating or standing up in a company meeting and saying, I want to celebrate my colleagues for doing great work. I don't have that problem as a loudmouth recruiter and HR practitioner. Lots of engineers would prefer to not have to ever stand up in front of the room and talk to anybody about anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have a, well, I mean, I think time is running out, but so for my part, I have one question to ask about. I want to hear your insights or your prediction of where, let me characterize where we are. I mean, so we are right now in a complicated process transformational process of humankind, where every single company, every new company that's going to be, I mean, most of the new companies will require software development in some sort. So, and that is growing exponentially, and the growth of software developers available is at the being optimistic linear.
So definitely not exponential. Right.
So what you see happening in the next 10 years about that crisis, because this is a crisis.
Yeah.
So what do you think happening in the world?
So if my prediction ends up being right, $1 million is going to be what I'll ask for. If it was wrong, anyway, don't hold me to it. You know, one of the things that we are just starting to experience, and one of the things that I think has been extremely healthy for Single Stone, is the whole idea of developers coming from completely different backgrounds. Like when I first started at Single Stone, every consultant that worked on our team had to have a 4-year degree. We peeled that away and we're like, you know, some of the smartest engineers I've ever worked with didn't graduate from college. And some of the biggest pains in the asses I've ever worked with have multiple degrees from multiple universities, right? And so it's like, and big consulting firms are doing this too. It's not just little ones like Single Stone, where you don't have to have a computer science degree and you don't have to go to an engineering school and you don't have to even in some cases come from a trade school. But the idea that the boot camp philosophy, or that people are sort of changing careers, the amount of technology and learning that's available online, I mean, people just have opportunities I could be a software engineer. I don't think I'd ever pass an assessment, but I could if I wanted to. And if I wanted to put the time and the dedication into learning, then I certainly hope that someone is going to give me a chance. And while that is still difficult, especially in the services industry, where a lot of times clients are expecting you to have expertise that they don't have in-house, you know, we have been wildly successful with that whole boot camp, you know, apprentice-like concept where someone would have never looked qualified and we may not have ever given them an opportunity 10 years ago. And so I believe that that organizations, the progressive ones anyway, will continue to shift and think about how we can expand the applicant pool and open an invitation for people to join our firm who look different, who act different, who have different experiences, different backgrounds, different education, no education. And I think that's just healthy for organizations in general. And what an amazing opportunity you're giving to people who may not otherwise have it. So that's my first prediction. My second prediction is that the hybrid work won't stay the way it is today forever. And I don't know what that looks like as far as the next 5 to 10 years. But I do think there is an element of the in-person connection and collaboration that will have to come back in some way, shape, or form. And I don't think it will ever be 5 days a week. But I do think the idea, even if it's on a monthly or quarterly basis, that teams are coming together to connect, to talk, to challenge each other, to look each other in the eye, to shake hands, to hug, that has to happen at some point. And, you know, we, again, is just really dipping our toe in this water. We do basically 3 times a year. So basically every quarter, except the very first one, invite the team to come to Single Stone for a week. We call it, We Are Single Stone Weeks. And we try and plan a host of different activities. So it's social, it's community, it's meet with your manager, it's sit with your team. It is not mandatory, but really just allowing people to come in and feel the culture and meet the people and see each other face to face. And I think that I literally joke, but I'm actually not joking. I think I buy myself 6 months of retention every time our team gets together. Because it's good old fashioned human connection, and that will never be able to be replicated in the virtual world. Right. So I think it doesn't have to be every day. It doesn't have to be every week even, but there has to be, I believe, some human touch point in order for cultures to continue to evolve, you know, together and as people and not just as digital presences. So those are my two predictions. I'll wait for my $1 million.
Well, I'm going to add on to those if I may, David, because I want to share that $1 million also.
Price. But,
Well, we have to keep David out. We're going to dilute it too much if we let him.
That's right. Well, I think, you know,
you're lost. You're losing your chances to win the $1 million.
That's great. This is one of the things that's been interesting for us, I think, that changed with the pandemic. And now I think maybe is going back to the old way of doing business in a good way. Is prior to the pandemic, when we were talking to clients, and at that time, of course, these companies were not as used to having remote teams, and they were nervous about it. One of the things we would offer is, well, let's get everybody together at a central location, because not only are we remote, but we're quite international too. And there were a number of times where we had a client visit us in Costa Rica, and we would, because that's a nice central meeting point for the team members. And, you know, we would fly in our team, they'd fly in their team. We'd get together, we'd do some work in person for a couple of days in a conference room, but we'd also go do something fun together and bond, right? And we definitely saw, you know, a significant, hard to quantify, but significant, you know, increase in the collaboration and the efficiency and the bonding of that team because they'd had that experience together of doing something fun. So I think that's huge. But I want to also build on what you said in your first prediction, which I think is really, really interesting of, you know, no degrees being required, not even a trade school. I'm going to build on that a little bit and say, I think one way this talent crisis will be, maybe it's too bold to say solved in the future, but improved is through company specific trade schools.
Yes.
And I think this, you know, there's going to be pros and cons to this, right? But there was I believe it was on the Freakonomics podcast, an episode at some point earlier this year, where they talked about the future of higher education. And there was a story about a shoe designer who ended up getting funding, I believe, from Nike. To go do these like 2-week workshops at design universities. And in those 2 weeks, they would go through the complete process of designing a shoe. And it was, they got it funded by Nike, I believe, you know, a big shoe manufacturer, because it was so targeted to what they do and an opportunity to really see not just do you have good design skills, do you like shoes, but, you know, do you like this whole process?
Yeah.
Is this something you want to do professionally? And then they've hired people out of that. And, you know, I think a similar thing, like one of my sons soon to go to college looking at video game design, and he is casting aside most schools that are just computer science because he wants schools that do this very, very specific thing around video game design. And one aspect that he likes about that is that they do complete projects with the graphic designers, the video animation experts. They have classes on how to, you know, storyboard the whole theme of the game, all these things that are so specific to that field. And, you know, whereas like me with a electrical engineering, computer science background, I was learning C++, which I've never used since then personally. Right.
Right.
So learning those super specific things, and that's really going to be driven by companies, maybe a little larger than us at Agility Feed and you at Single Stone, perhaps, but maybe we're on the cusp of that too, of having Single Stone University, of Agility Feet University, that really teaches the way we do things and the tech stacks we work on. And that's how we bring people with a different educational background into it, right?
I love that. I love that. We're not able to compete on the same scale as some of the larger organizations, but I think we can take the concept, to your point, and have it work for an Agility Feed or a Single Stone. It just, we may have to think about the resources in a slightly different way.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Good. Well, we don't have to split the $1 million 50-50, Trisha. You were first mover on that, so you get the majority, but mostly, I hope I made my case.
I'll at least buy dinner.
Perfect.
Okay, I think time's up.
Which is a shame. This has been a wonderful conversation.
Yeah, I will keep going. But yeah, so can I get the takeaways section? Can I claim that?
Please.
Let me know
the takeaway.
But you have to start.
I have to start. Okay. So I think that transitioning to learning to live with the post-COVID new normal. It's been difficult for everyone. I think that the first takeaway, it was less horrible than we thought it could be, I think. I think that as humanity, as advanced technological species, we had already Zoom and we had these other alternatives to do this. And we were at a good time to do the transition. So it was less painful. It was painful, but less painful than we thought. And we can trust, particularly if we have the right philosophy and the right processes and the right purpose, we can trust our people to deliver their job. I mean, to do their job, wherever they are. I think that's my biggest takeaway from this.
Yep.
Done.
Perfect. I'll say for me, one of the things I really liked is I've said a few things already that I'm taking out of this conversation. But one thing I wrote down as soon as you said it, Tricia, was the attitude, aptitude, skills ranking in the conversations. And I think that's something like we've done kind of intuitively, but I really like the way that you say that and having that easily digestible format that we can, as we're growing and people besides David and I are doing the interviewing of candidates, something that helps express to them what you should be looking for in the candidate. And it's not just about the best university or the most number of years experience in a particular technology. That attitude and aptitude make a huge, huge difference.
Yep, absolutely. Am I allowed to have a takeaway too?
Please, you're all encouraged. Right. It required, in fact.
Oh, I love it.
In fact, required, yeah.
You know, the comment that you made, David, about being honored to work with someone and this whole concept of, you know, being leaving our company a better engineer than when you got here. And then even, Aaron, what you just said at the very end about how can small companies like Singlestone and Agility Feet think about, you know, new and different ways to train up, to skill develop, to mentor, to coach, you know, so that we can continue to provide opportunities to the developers that we have on our team today and the ones that we want to hire down the road. And I think, you know, it's learning and development is such an overwhelming thing to think about. But if you break it down, start small and just think about, you know, what we can do next month, in, you know, next quarter, next year, I think we will be living up to our promise of helping people be better than when they got here. And that's something that I'm motivated and inspired to come away with today.
Awesome. Thank you, Tricia. Really appreciate this conversation. This was a wonderful conversation. I hope we can do it again sometime.
I would love that.
Where can our listeners learn more about Singlestone?
Sure. If you would like to visit Singlestone's website, it's www.singlestoneconsulting.com. Check out our career page and our About Us page too. There's a great video that showcases our culture, our team, some of the great work that we do, and even some, I think, bios of our team and pictures so you can kind of see who we are and what we're all about.
Thank you so much. Thanks again for joining us on the Scaling Tech Podcast, Tricia.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Brought to you by AgilityFeet.com, experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally. For more information on today's episode and to submit your ideas for future guests, please visit ScalingTechPod.com.